This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Douglas Johnson, the legislative director at the National Right to Life Committee here in Washington. You may remember just a couple of weeks ago, in the wake of the president's health care speech to Congress, we went through the House resolution that has been, until recently, the main piece of legislation produced towards health care reform legislation. Mr. Johnson explained how, yes, in fact, there would be taxpayer-funded abortions in that piece of legislation. Now we want Mr. Johnson to evaluate the bill outlined last week and being marked up this week, sponsored by Montana Democrat and Senate Finance Committee Chairman Max Baucus. He says it not only allows taxpayer-funded abortions, but also threatens the health of America's seniors. And Mr. Johnson, it's always good to have you with us.
Good to be with you, Greg.
Let's start with the abortion question. What does the Baucus bill specify and not specify when it comes to whether taxpayers will be footing the bill for abortions?
Well, the House bill, you recall, had a couple of separate and big problems on abortion, one of which was the government setting up a national public plan, a national insurance plan that was authorized to cover, pay for all abortions, any abortions. That is not part of the Baucus bill. But a second problem with the House bill was that it would provide a huge new program to provide government subsidies, tax-based subsidies, to help tens of millions of Americans buy private health insurance, and it would authorize subsidies to go to plans, private plans that cover elective abortions. Now, that problem is also found in Senator Baucus' bill. They use a little bit different language, but it, in substance, is the same thing. You would have a huge amount of tax money going to help tens of millions of people buy health insurance, and it would allow that subsidy to apply to plans that cover elective abortions. Now, this would be a radical break from longstanding federal policy. Right now, under a panoply of different federal laws, federal funds do not pay for abortions, with very narrow exceptions. And federal funds do not currently pay any part of the premium cost of anybody's private health insurance if it includes abortion. For example, our 8 million federal employees, including the members of Congress themselves, are covered under private insurance plans, but it's under a law that says those plans cannot include abortion. Why not? Well, because they're federally subsidized. And that's the same principle we think should apply to any new program. But Senator Baucus has not included any language in his bill that would protect these the taxpayers from having to subsidize these abortion-covering plans. In fact, instead, he's put in language that would explicitly authorize that the subsidies would go to plans that cover elective abortions.
Douglas, we obviously heard the president say a couple of weeks ago that he was trying to say that there was no money headed to these plans. What has been the Baucus reaction to this? Does he admit that these subsidies will, in fact, pay for elective abortions, or is he trying a sleight of hand as well?
Well, he's trying a kind of a shell game. He's not denying that the federal funds would go to help pay the premiums for plans that would include abortion, but he's got some kind of bookkeeping requirement in there where the insurance plans would say, well, when they pay for an abortion, we're not using the federal funds part, we're using other money. You know, this is totally a scam. I mean, it's a bookkeeping fiction. The question is, should the federal taxpayer be subsidizing insurance plans that include elective abortion? Because when the government pays for insurance, the government pays for what the insurance pays for, regardless of how the books are kept. And we have a federal policy, as I've described, under which that can't happen. If you want abortion in your insurance plan, right now you're not eligible for a federal subsidy. But they're proposing here to create this huge new program. So this is a new thing, and they're trying to smuggle this in. And the president's statements simply don't conform in any way to what's actually happening on Capitol Hill. The president and his appointees and his chief allies in Congress for several months have made one misleading statement after another. They are using language in a distorted sense. They are using misdirection. And they're just flat out misrepresenting what some of these provisions would do. And unfortunately, the institutional news media, for the most part, is either just letting them get away with it or in some cases actually echoing the distortions. And this is regrettable. But what's actually in the bills is what I have described, and it would be a drastic change from longstanding federal policy.
Let's talk about what impact this Baucus bill might have on America's seniors now. I know that you're also extremely concerned about this, and from what I understand, it's because doctors who ask for the most in Medicare reimbursements would eventually be penalized. Explain in better detail for our listeners how this could eventually lead to poor care for our seniors.
Well, they have a provision in there that penalizes doctors who authorize treatments for patients that wind up in the top 10% per capita cost for a year. Those doctors will lose 5% of their total Medicare reimbursements for that year. So what this means is that all doctors treating older people would constantly be driven to try to order less expensive tests and treatments for fear that they're going to be caught up in that top 10%. And this operates independently of any considerations of quality, efficiency, or waste. So if the doctor authorizes enough treatment for your patients, no matter how necessary it is, no matter how appropriate, he would be in danger of being in that 10% at the end of the year that would be penalized. And it's kind of a moving target because there's always going to be a top 10%, you see. So it's like a game of musical chairs in which there's always one chair less than the number of players. No matter how fast the contestants run, someone is always the loser. And under this system, every year there would be a loser who would be the 10% who had supposedly billed more than their colleagues without regard to any of these considerations. It creates an incentive that's purely cost-driven, and it would create a constant pressure of uncertainty on doctors. Nobody would know in advance precisely what the cutoff would be for a given year. And so this would create a pressure to order less tests, less treatment, as doctors would try to avoid being in this penalty box.
In terms of the impact on doctors, what would a 5% lack of reimbursement mean for their practices?
Well, you know, a lot of doctors already complain that they get inadequate compensation from Medicare, and another 5% penalty on top of that would be a substantial disincentive. Some doctors stop treating Medicare patients altogether, but others would simply start cutting corners in an attempt to stay, in good graces with the government. So we call this the death spiral provision because it would constantly be pushing doctors to order less tests, less treatments, try to avoid being in that 10%. And again, this doesn't seem to us to be tied to objective standards about what, you know, the nature of the clientele a particular doctor is treating or whether he's actually ordering things that are medically unnecessary. It's just a more mechanical kind of a provision that is intended to put pressure on everybody without regard to legitimate medical considerations. So that's the way we read it. We've raised these concerns. As far as I know, nobody has provided any effective rebuttal to what we've said about this.
Last question for you, Douglas. It seemed as though when the idea of rationing care for the elderly first was raised and that concern reached the president, he laughed it off, saying that was ridiculous. Now we've seen a cover of Newsweek magazine this week making the case, literally, as it said on the cover, for killing granny, saying the end-of-life costs are simply too much. And to some extent, that is what needs to happen, is to reduce the amount of money spent on end-of-life care because it's not adding quality years and so forth. So what do you see in terms of how this debate is morphing right in front of us?
Well, the granny should consider whether she wants government bureaucrats who may think like the fresh-faced young editors at Newsweek deciding whether or not she gets the treatment she needs. And if not, then she should cast a very skeptical look at the Obama-backed health care bills, because these bills do make all sorts of promises to expand insurance for big new populations, and yet they say they're not going to cost much money or they're even going to save money. How can that be? Because they're not providing adequate funding mechanisms for down the line. And unless they do, then there's going to be rationing. And who is likely to bear the brunt of the rationing? It's going to be the senior citizens, going to be the elderly, going to be people who are medically dependent and disabled. These are the kinds of concerns that we've been raising, which the president and a lot of congressional Democrats simply want to brush off and say they're against rationing. They have these little verbal formulas, but they're not really addressing these structural issues. Where's the money going to come from? And who's going to decide?
Douglas, unfortunately, our time is up, sir. Thank you very much for being with us and helping our listeners understand all these critical issues.
Thank you.
Douglas Johnson is Legislative Director for the National Right to Life Committee. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.